Hello everyone, welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode, we're going to be talking to David Sands and Richard Inglis about how their businesses are adapting and responding to the lockdown. And we'll hear the latest local radio campaign with James, which this week is on some new activity that we're working on with the Competition and Markets Authority. First, though, let's go through some of the things that have changed over the last week. And Public Health England have updated its guidance on personal protective equipment to keep colleagues safe. And there's an important clarification in there on face masks specifically. So the guidance says that outside of clinical or care settings, there is actually very little evidence for widespread benefit of using a face mask. And I think that'll be really helpful to some retailers who are getting some questions from colleagues about use of face masks. So Public Health England guidance saying outside of clinical or care settings, very little evidence for widespread benefit. And we've got links to all of that guidance on our website. It's on the main COVID-19 page. There's also been some updated guidance on furloughing staff, clarifying who can be furloughed and for what reason. And the one area that stands out to me and I think is worthy of mentioning is people who have caring responsibilities. So, for example, people who can't work because they have to look after children, they can be furloughed. Again, all of the details on our website about furloughing and who can and can't and all of that detail there. And finally, Wales has now put social distancing guidelines into law. And this is different to Scotland and England, where it's guidance, it's best practice. Wales have gone a step further and put that into law. We've had a look over the guidelines and, to be honest, they're pretty vague. There's a lot of room for interpretation. And that's exactly where our primary authority relationship comes in, our assured advice. And we've asked our primary authority partner in Wales, which is Bridgend, to provide members with assured advice on this new social distancing legislation so that there's no confusion. So if retailers get a visit from Trading Standards or Environmental Health, with assured advice, you're following our guidance, you get a visit, you will be covered. We'll have that in the coming days, and we will of course let members know about that clarification in Wales. So let's get straight into the discussions with retailers then. And first up, I'm talking to David Sands, who's David Kitchen Stores are really well known for pushing the boundaries on food to go and having lots of people in store consuming food that's made on the premises, which is obviously going to have to change. So let's find out from him about how he's adapted his store over the last few weeks. Hello, David. How are you?
Yeah, Chris. Yeah, good morning from sunny Scotland. We're good. We're good.
Good. So
it's been quite a few weeks.
Yeah, it certainly has. And like you say, a sunny few weeks as well, which has made some of the guidance for people staying indoors a bit difficult. But there we go. Never mind. So for anyone who doesn't know about the business, can you just tell us what the stores are like? I guess on a normal day, sort of before all this, what the offer is in David's Kitchen.
Yeah, so David's Kitchen, as the name suggests, we have a kitchen in each of our three stores, and we produce a lot of the food that we sell in the stores. In fact, our aspiration is to get to 50% of our sales from things we make ourselves. Now, we're not there yet. We're somewhere between 25 and 30%. And in our latest store, as an example, we have seating in all our stores, but in our latest store, we have 50 covers. So it's very much a coffee shop, stroke bakery, stroke you can sit down, have a hot meal. So very much are all along the food service line.
Yeah, so I know the stores reasonably well just through sort of photos and videos, because I go up every year for the SLR Awards judging and the Scottish Grocer judging as well, and there's always at least one David's Kitchen store on for various different awards. And like you say, the focus on food prepared on the premises there for people is just phenomenal. So with all of this obviously going in the last few weeks, how have you had to adapt what the business does?
Yeah, well, I mean, our business has totally changed. Clearly, we've had to close down all our seated areas, so that starts as a big change. The fact, people would be working and come to us for lunch, or maybe before they start work, they would come for breakfast. That's all gone. Our takeaway business has I think it's dropped by about two thirds. So what we were left with is what I'm sure many ATS members have is a convenience store base of traditional product ranges, grocery, impulse, tobacco, news, and alcohol, and of course chilled foods. And so we've had to take away staff from all those areas. And luckily we had those staff who were able to move them into to the traditional areas because, as we all know, in the first week or so of this COVID crisis, we experienced real panic buying. Something we've seen perhaps up here occasionally when we get really bad weather. So that sort of panic is we have experienced that before, but probably not at the same level.
So in your stores then, have you had sort of shelves cleared and all that kind of thing in that first week as well?
Well, I mean, like everybody else, we went through the toilet roll panic, and then it went on to dried pasta, tinned soup, things that, you know, very much were a traditional part of our business, but possibly a part of our business that we don't really think about that much. So we had to scrabble around like everybody else and just get stock in for our customers. And, you know, that's been challenging. It's sometimes frustrating, but we fully understand. We are a nicer co-op partner member, and you know, we understand their supply chain has had huge volume increases. I think they've almost doubled their volume.
Sure.
I'm totally sympathetic. I think the guys within that supply chain, as I'm sure all other supply chains, have been doing a wonderful job given the situation they face.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's just on all levels, it's basically unprecedented, isn't it? We've not been in a situation like this before. So I think anything that we can do as close to normal is a phenomenal job. So you mentioned about all those customers that would be coming in for food. Are you seeing the same people now that are in coming for grocery stuff? Or is it are you seeing new people in store? Or is it, what's the customer base like now?
Yeah, it's changed, and to be honest, we've actually even changed our trading hours. We would trade from 6 a.m. till 10 p.m. We've changed those hours to 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Partly because there are very few people. When we opened at 6, we would get a lot of people who would be coming to us for breakfast, for coffee, all that sort of stuff before they go to work. Nobody's going out working at the moment, or very few people are. So we've lost that customer base. We've also lost the customers who would pop in for lunch or for coffee or whatever. All these people have gone. They're now at home, and unless they live locally to us, we don't see them. But of course, what we do see are those who live in and around our stores, probably within a radius of a mile to a mile and a half. Those people who were using the store before, but we're seeing them probably more often. And when they do come in, they're buying. Certainly, the basket spend is much higher.
Sure, yeah. And I was going to ask about the response locally then. So you said you're seeing a lot more customers that are within the local area. Has the feedback been broadly positive for people saying, you know, I can't get stuff anywhere else, and you're the place where I can get the things I need?
Yeah, we've been quite strong on social media, so. We have quite a lot of followers on Facebook, and this all came about. I'll never forget this. When the beast from the east came up here, I mean, it was really quite bad. The weather was bad, and I'll never forget. We put up a post saying that we just received a delivery of milk, and I'll never forget looking at the count on this and the shares on Facebook, and within 20 minutes, something like 4,000. Views of this particular post, and that brought it home to me how important social media is in communicating immediately with our customers. So we've been doing this for quite a long time. So what we've been doing these last couple of weeks is telling people, you know, what's going on in our store. So, if you know, we tell them how our supplies are. We tell them about, I think one of the things that I really think has been important is we tell people about the measures we're taking to protect our staff.
Yeah.
Never mind our customers, protect our staff. So we tell them, it's all down there, the stuff that we're doing. And I suppose it's, you know, we're all in this together. We as the local community store, we've got to play a part. You know, for me, the most difficult decision, probably the most difficult decision I've had to make for a very long time, was whether to remain open or not. It would have been easy for me to say, you know what, our takeaway cafe business is gone, we should close down. And, you know, my sister works in stores, I'm working in the business, my son has started working in the store. So, you know, I had sleepless nights worrying about staff safety. It really bothered me. But in the end, you know, local stores, I don't think they've ever become, I don't think they're ever more important than now. And I think there's quite a realization right across the country that local retailers have been doing a wonderful job and have adapted very, very quickly to this situation. You know, as an example, some of the staff safety measures that are now commonplace, we had them up within 2 days. We had Perspex screens up. We had areas marked out on our queuing, all that sort of stuff. So we reacted quickly. We told our customers what we were doing. And, you know, we got it into our minds that we had to help our local communities. And, you know, I've got, my parents are in their late 70s and, you know, they're in self-isolation. And it, obviously, we've all got people we know in self-isolation. Now, my parents don't use online shopping, and there's no prospect that they're going to be able to anyway, because what's happened here is that the online shopping slots have all been taken up. I think I read somewhere that Ocado are really struggling to cope. So the local shops, and I can see this up and down the country, including ourselves, we've created a delivery service for people. Predominantly, it's targeted towards people who are in self-isolation. And customers can phone in, they can text it, they can do whatever they need, it works for them. They can communicate with us. We will make up the order. Sometimes we don't have everything they ask for, but we can work around it.
Yeah.
And we take payment and we take payment over the phone from them, and we deliver it. And we don't charge any delivery charge for it. We just see this as an important part of what we're about, and you know, serving our local community.
Yeah. What kind of timescales are you looking at on that delivery? So, because you'd said about Ocado, and you know, lots of people have talked about getting deliveries in what, 3-4 weeks. I assume you're running a lot quicker than that.
Somebody phones up in the morning, they'll get product in the afternoon.
Yeah, which is
that's
brilliant.
How we work. We don't. Yeah. There's no lag, and you know, why I know this is working is, we see immediately from the feedback on our social media, we see sons and daughters saying, you know, you're really helping my parents. I'm so grateful. You know, absolute godsend. And it's quite humbling, to be honest. I know we're doing the right thing here. And I'm proud. I'm proud of the team. I'm proud our team have adapted so quickly. I'm proud that they're coming into work because, you know, there must be concerns. Right up and down the industry, people will be concerned about going into work, but they're still coming up. And, you know, all credit to them. I'm very proud of them all.
Yeah, which is phenomenal. And I think when we get back into the long term, I think what people will have learned during this period is that the people working in shops, the people running shops, are just doing an incredible job. And like we've been saying as well, just keeping those communities going. And I think in the first few days, it was all about supermarkets. It was all, you know, supermarket shelves and, you know, there's no stock and isn't this terrible? And then the messages started getting through that actually it's the local shops that are keeping, you know, keeping people, you know, fed, basically.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Chris. And it'll be interesting to see when we come out of that, you know, how that then translates into government attitude towards our industry and whatever. But there's another point as well. We have a national supply chain through NYSA Co-op, but we have always worked with local suppliers. And I have never been so glad that that's the case within our business. So our local suppliers, our butchery supplier, our bakery supplier, our milk supplier, and all sorts of other wonderful suppliers who have really stepped up to help. I mean, you know, it's been wonderful, and it's meant that we've had product when others haven't. And I mean, that's just been tremendous for us. Mm. And, you know, I've been going to ACS conferences for many, many years, and you know, there's a common theme about local suppliers, local retailers working with local suppliers. Well, yes, you have to have that national supply chain, but just as importantly, you have to have the local suppliers as well. And I think that's one of the lessons that I'm sure many retailers are reflecting on now, just how important it is to have key local suppliers and to build great relationships as we have. We've been working with our bakery supplier for over 30 years. And, you know, we've always had bakery products. We've got a great relationship with our milk supplier, Graham's and Stirling. And, you know, we've always had milk. And it's really important that we have these essential lines.
Yeah, what was going to be my last question, actually, was about when we think into the future, yourself and I guess other retailers as well, what will you have learned during this period that you'll be able to take back into the business when it starts getting back to normal? And you said about local suppliers being massively important, which is obviously the case, and having built that trust over a period of time to be able to, you know, get that supply into stores. Is there anything else you think that is, you know, was a bit of a shock, but then is a really important lesson that you've learned just in the last few weeks, that when things get back to normal, you think actually we'll change that in the business because that's worked really well, or something that, you know, you think actually we don't need to do this?
Yeah, we've been, I mean, it's just typical that, you know, you have an event that forces you to change rapidly. We've been discussing how to do deliveries. We've been thinking about, you know, particularly the products we make in store, our David's Kitchen products. Can we offer a delivery service for these? So if you're staying in your office and you'd like, you know, a nice sandwich, a coffee or whatever, how can we do that? Well, you know, to be honest, we're learning with this delivery service. And I mean, I am sure that that's what we will do next once we come out of this. As to your wider point, I think the industry should be proud of itself and should, I think the country, I'm sure, will recognise just the importance of local stores in the whole supply chain. And, you know, we found in the past that when we've had really bad weather, we see people we don't normally see. Now, when we return to normal, we found that our sales always pick up a little. So people use us maybe for the first time. And I'm not saying that 100% will, but it only needs, you know, a few percent to come in, try your store for the first time. See, actually, it's not a bad place to shop. Mm. And so we're kind of hopeful that you know, we will have made new customers and we'll welcome them back. I've been sort of racking my brains and thinking about, you know, all those people in self-isolation and how we welcome them back to stores.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
We've missed them and I'm sure they've missed getting out and you know, talking to staff in our stores and whatever. You know, this whole self-isolation thing, it's there's not a lot of attention to it, but my son happens to be doing the deliveries for a lot of the orders that come into our Glenrothes store, and it's really quite touching to hear the stories. I mean, a lot of these people, they, you know, if they're on their own, they don't see anybody.
Yeah.
Nobody. And so my son arrives, and you know, he's a bit like me. He's not particularly chatty, but I've forced him to, you know, say, look, you know, you have to speak to people if you can, keep your distance, but you know, ask them how they're doing, and they are so grateful. And, you know, of course, he can never get away once we get chatting.
Yeah.
But I was explaining to him, this is really important that we, you know, we must do this. We've got to, you know, people feel isolated. Somebody come along chatting and they're getting the groceries or whatever. That's really important. So, you know, is there a thought about, you know, our links with people, you know, people who struggle a bit in life, you know, how could we do more to help them going forward? You know, that's also going through my mind.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because we often talk about reaching isolated people to maintain their physical health, to make sure they've got food. But actually what you're saying there is that local shops aren't just doing that. They are helping people's mental health as well and keeping them, you know, keeping them going that way by, you know, like you said, just that could be the only conversation they have with someone that day. It could be the only person they see for a week. You know, all that sort of thing is absolutely essential.
Well, we know from customer research that people choose our stores because they like the friendly staff. So friendliness is really important. In other words, a conversation, not a self-scanning till. And yeah, I think there's something in that going forward that we, you know, our industry can look at, I think, in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, David, I'm going to have to leave it there because I realise I've taken up quite a lot of your time already, and I'm sure you're extremely busy getting back into the business. So thank you again for coming to have a chat with us, and please keep us updated. If people want to find out what's going on in your social media, you mentioned that was really important. What's the best way for them to do that? Is it Facebook, Twitter?
Yeah, go to Facebook, David's Kitchen.
David's Kitchen, okay.
It's on there. Just final point, I think ACS have been doing a wonderful job, and I sent James an email last week. The information that's been coming out has been excellent, and you know, you're ahead of the curve on most things there. So, you know, on behalf of retailers, I'm, you know, really grateful for that. It's been really useful. So, you know, take some positive feedback here. It's been really good. You're doing a great job.
Great, thanks, David. And like I said, we will keep pushing government and keep trying to get stuff out there as quick as possible to help you guys, because, you know, you're on the front lines there. So it's just what we can do to support you. So again, thanks again for having a chat, and keep us updated.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Thanks again there to David, and he makes a really good point about what the sector does long term, because we really need to capitalise on the good faith that we've built with consumers, and look out for more on that in the coming weeks and months. Next up, I'm talking to Richard Inglis, who runs 3 stores in Southampton, and they've been hit really hard actually by the disruption because of where they are, whether it's right next to a big shopping centre, a big train station, or, you know, part of a student accommodation area. Richard's stores have taken a big hit, and he's been, you know, very honest with me for this podcast about how the business is doing. So here is that interview now. Hi, Richard. Good to speak to you.
Good to speak to you as well, Chris.
Excellent. So I thought it'd be good to give you a call because we've heard on social media and around, and on this podcast as well, from retailers that are extremely busy at the moment. They're in those locations that have lots of people in them that are going to stores. Shelves are, you know, cleared out every few hours, but that's not the case everywhere. And we hear from some stores that are in transport hubs and city centres and that kind of thing that are not quite as busy. So, what's the situation for your store?
Well, we have 3 stores in Southampton city centre, and initially for the first sort of 2 or 3 days we had some quite good trade, but then quite the reverse happened for us compared to a lot of other people. We found a huge drop in trade, in fact so much so one of our stores is located near a major leisure, Westquays Leisure Centre and Shopping Centre. We've had to close that store down now. The trade dropped below 5,000 a week from a £30,000 a week store, right, essentially, wow, in less than 5 days. One of our other stores is operated outside Southampton Central train station, so a major bustling hub of trains, buses and offices, and it's a ghost town now, and we've dropped just over 50% in that store. So, and then our third store is student halls, and although that one's holding up better, we're still down by 25% there as most of the students have left. We've got quite a lot of residential business, but it's been tough, Chris, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things that the government has said is that they are trying to support wherever possible. Have you seen any of this come through in reality yet? Like, we heard last week that Rishi Sunak was saying, you know, local authorities have all the money now. They should be getting in touch with you, or you can speak to them and they should be getting the funding out to you.
Well, we're having an interesting experience. So first of all, with regards to the grants based upon your rateable value of your stores, two of my stores qualified for the £25,000 grant. One of them didn't because it is over the £51,000 mark.
Right.
So I went online and the process was relatively easy. It took me less than about 3 or 4 minutes to put my applications in. And I put my applications into two shops. I subsequently have got a credit note saying I'm going to get the grant for one store.
Okay.
And I've heard nothing about the second store. And
are they both the same local authority, or are you different authorities?
It's the same local authority, both so, within okay. 2 miles of each other. Grant for one, not a grant for the other one. The frustrating thing about it is the credit note I've got doesn't tell me which of the two shops has got the grant. It just tells me I've got one grant being paid. There's no contact details. You can't email anyone. You can't phone anyone. There's no the email you send information to ask questions is a non-reply one. So I'm at a loss to try and find out who I now speak to in the council about my second £25,000 grant.
Yeah,
so that's one of my problems to deal with. So, but at least I suppose I'm getting half the grant through, so I suppose I shouldn't complain too much.
Well, I mean, you're definitely entitled to get all of the grant through. So, I mean, keep pushing with that, and we'll help wherever we can, because you should be getting the 25 for each of those stores. So, we'll keep us updated on that.
Okay, and with regards to the COVID loan situation, I always try to be straight with people. What it is essentially the problem we have is basically our trade dropped. So we were paying bills based upon sales that the company no longer had. So we have, as a company, we are going to burn through £300,000 in basically 5 weeks, which essentially is wiping us out as a company, because although we had good cash reserves, I didn't have quite that much money. Just got enough maybe to get through, but we are literally skating on thin ice here. So we have been in touch with our bank. And initially it all sounded very positive, and they are still being very helpful. However, even after the announcement by the Chancellor, we received a 9-page personal statement that we were asked to fill in, which included everything from my assets, my house, my mortgage rate, whether I had cash in stocks and shares, whether I owned any vehicles, whether we had any jewellery, for both myself and my wife.
This is a business interruption loan. It's not a, it shouldn't, and the Chancellor said, is like, this shouldn't be secured against personal assets. So it seems really annoying that the banks are looking at your personal details in that much, with that much scrutiny. Like that seems crazy to me that they're doing that.
Yes, I did question the bank manager on it, and they said the reason they needed it was because they needed to understand what drawings would make on the company over the next 12 months. I did point out that they'd asked us for a detailed cash flow statement, which included all that information. So why they needed to know what mortgage rate I was on seemed to be kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
So I, at this point, have said that I will not be providing that to them as part of my loan application. And as far as I understand it, that should not hinder my application. But I guess time will tell.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more of this over the coming weeks and months, because banks, it seems like, are not being particularly helpful. I mean, we've been talking for years about problems with access to finance and that kind of thing, and right now is the time where banks should be stepping up and saying, you know, we can help you with this, because the government has, you know, in no uncertain terms has told them to. I would keep banging the drum on that, and we will help wherever we can, because it sounds
thank you, Chris. I mean, we're lucky in the sense that we had a bit of cash flow reserves, and we've been able to continue trading, so we have money to last us through until May. But I know there's plenty of other companies out there that are in far more dire straits than I am. And if I'm having all these problems, it makes me wonder what everyone else is going through. It must be horrific out there.
Yeah, Yeah, sure. And like we said at the start, it's important to remember that there are some stores that are just, you know, have been wiped out in terms of trade, because they might be, like you say, near a train station, near a big shopping centre. I mean, those are, you know, pretty big hits. So, yeah. So for the stores that you say, you've got one store that's still, is it two stores that's still trading?
Two stores still trading. We've got our student hall stores and our train station store. From, you know, so we're still trading, that's good. However, it's not plain sailing. In the city, it's very different picture than in the villages. Social distancing for our customers and managing it is proving to be an absolute nightmare. Some of our customers are amazing and they really get it, but frankly, half our customers don't. We're having on a daily basis aggression towards our staff. We had a case just before the weekend where we had three of our staff members spat on by a shoplifter. And we're finding an increasing amount of violence from the drug addicts and the street drinkers who are now getting very desperate on the streets. And contrary to what might be going out in the press, we still have beggars outside our stores. And it's getting quite dangerous for my team out there at the moment. And it's a little bit frustrating because the streets seem to be devoid of police, but full of addicts and people just basically harassing us on a daily basis at the moment.
Yeah, and I guess it feels like you're perhaps more of a target at the moment because there are so few other businesses that are open. So, people aren't really going elsewhere.
Yeah, that's it. And the problem we've got as well is the bigger operators like Tesco's and Sainsbury's and Asda's, they've all paid for personal security. So, you know, the big Asda's in Southampton has five security guards outside it, so they're not having the problem. So for the stores that are open, all that crime and hassle has been pushed on a smaller number of retailers. And to be frank, we just do not have the resources to pay for security.
Yeah, sure.
And when we've spoken to the police about it, their advice to us is we should employ security guards. And what we're saying to them is it would be really great if they would pick these people up that are sort of... you know, attempting shoplift at us 4, 5, 6 times in a day and assaulting our staff, that'd be really helpful from our point of view right now, because it is a small group of about 10 people in the city, but they just seem to be left to do what they want at the moment, which is a great shame.
Yeah. And I think one thing on that, you mentioned that you had people that had been spat at and almost using this virus as a weapon. We were talking to the police last week and they're saying that those kind of things will be treated as a serious incident. They're not taking these things lightly. I know you're having issues at the moment with getting the police to respond on things, but I think longer term we are being told that sort of stuff is being taken seriously. So hopefully
it is. In that case, the customer was, we were actually able to detain the customer until the police arrived, and the customer was arrested. But frustratingly, they were then bailed later that evening and now back out on the street doing exactly the same thing they were doing before. So although that's not always the police's fault, it's down to the Crown Prosecution Service. There's people committing quite serious crimes and then back on the street a few hours later to do the same thing again. But it does feel like a bit of a vicious cycle at the moment.
Yeah. And so thinking more longer term then, what needs to happen for those stores to keep going? Are you thinking sort of medium to long term that you'll stay as you are?
Well, we've had drastic action. So we have furloughed 65% of our workforce now, and we've had to drastically reduce our costs and our purchases. So we believe by the time we hit mid to end of May, we should balance out with sales versus purchases, and we should start to become somewhat cash positive. But a lot of this is based upon a lot of factors that we have no control of. We don't know when we're going to get support from the government with the payroll. We don't know how long that's going to take to come through. I don't know whether we will be getting our COVID loan from the bank, whether we'll be successful. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get the second half of our grant. So, all these factors can have a huge, you know, swing factor on how we are successful longer term. If they all come through, then... you know, our business should be secure moving forward. But it's hard when you're trying to forecast your business when all your patterns and trade have gone out the window overnight. I mean, we were sat down with my people and we were talking about Easter, and we've got no idea what pattern we're going to see for Easter, because normally the city's a bit quiet over Easter.
Yeah.
We're not sure if that's going to be the case this year because people can't go anywhere. So what's Easter going to look like?
Yeah, I was talking to David Sands earlier, different thing, but everything is just unprecedented now. It's like there's no real modelling or planning or anything, because we just don't know what's going to happen, do we? And it's a really important point you make, actually, about when all of these loans and support and things hit accounts, because it's quite easy sometimes to think once something's been announced and we've said, it's great that this has been announced, that that's sort of the end of the story, when actually that's the beginning, isn't it? It's okay, these things are available, but how long does it take to get through? And if it takes too long, then in a lot of cases, like you said, some businesses will be not able to hold on for that long until they get loans, grants, support through.
Well, absolutely. I mean, like obviously in our case, we're 65% of our workforce off at the moment. That's great. And if I look at it from an accounts point of view, my payroll will be manageable, but I have to pay the whole payroll for everyone. So I'm still going to be paying the full payroll. And until I get that money refunded from the government, I'm paying a payroll based upon the business doing more than double the turnover that we're currently doing.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be sustainable for more than, say, 2 months, if that makes sense. And after that point, if we don't get funds or have a regular supply of, credits coming back from the government, it's going to make the business increasingly challenging to operate. And like I said, we're in a better position than most. So again, I feel terrible for sort of saying how tough we're having it, when I know that a lot of other companies out there, they're in a much worse position than we are.
Yeah, sure. So I guess from our point of view, we will be, we're on all these calls with government and things, and we're just going to make sure that every time we are pushing for making sure this stuff gets out as quickly as possible. And I'm sure you're aware, the wheels of government turn pretty slowly most of the time, but we'll push them as hard as we can. Listen, Richard.
Absolutely. And we're going to do our bit in the background. We're carrying on. We're doing our best to make sure our staff are fully supported. And I suppose at this moment, it does feel like a giant leap of faith in the government. And we're going with it. And fingers crossed it's going to work out at the other end. But yeah. I feel like I'm gambling with quite large numbers at the moment. So hopefully it'll all work out.
Yeah. And like I say, most of the time, these things do have a way of working out eventually. And I guess it's just holding on and I guess a new normal from now on, I guess. Listen, Richard, I'm gonna leave it there, because I appreciate you're really busy adapting the business, basically. So thanks for taking the time out. I really appreciate it. And I think it's really important to get the other side of that story, that not every store is flying off the shelves.
No, Chris, that's not a problem. Thanks for taking the time to speak to me.
Great. I can't thank Richard enough for that honest update on how the business is doing. It's so easy to say that everything's fine. It's a lot more difficult to give a frank account about how things have changed in the business. And I hope that if there's anyone who is in a similar situation with loans or grants or other government help coming through too slowly, please just keep pushing to get those funds through. They are supposed to be there. They are available for you. And of course, get in touch with us. We will do what we can to help. The final part of the podcast today, as we've done for the last few weeks, is to give you a preview of some of the work that we're doing to keep local shops on the agenda for local radio stations. Obviously, radio getting a huge boom at the moment in terms of people listening, because there's not that much else to do. This week, James is talking about a campaign that we're running to encourage retailers to report anyone who is hiking prices unfairly to the CMA. And we've been told by the CMA that they are taking this issue extremely seriously. And so we think it's important to put these messages out that the incidents should be reported, because the vast majority of stores are doing an incredible job. And we don't want a few taking advantage and ruining the reputation that everyone else has built in their community. So we're doing a lot of activity on this CMA campaign over the next couple of weeks. And here's a preview of that radio interview with James now.
Well, joining me on the line now to give us their latest update on what they're doing to make sure prices stay fair is CEO of the Association of Convenience Stores, James Lohman. James, thank you for joining me.
Hello. Hi.
First question, I guess, has to be, are things starting to settle down for your members now that we're a few weeks into the restrictions?
Well, it's obviously a really interesting time and a unique time for us. So after the initial burst of panic buying and stockpiling, which really happened primarily through the bigger stores and the supermarkets, and then we came through maybe a few days after that, now things have settled down into a bit more of a normal in terms of people getting used to restrictions, to social distancing. We're actually seeing the convenience store sector really way above the supermarkets in terms of our sales compared to normal. So many more people shopping in local shops. That's probably because people don't want to travel far. People are shopping every 2-3 days, typically. They don't want to go out every day, but equally they want to shop probably a smaller quantity of things whenever they do go out. They don't necessarily want to get in the car. They don't want to go to a big shop. But we're seeing that we may be seeing about the same number of customers coming into the store, but they're spending more than they would usually spend in a convenience store. So the average basket spend, as we call it, in convenience stores in normal times is about £6, £6.50. And we're seeing that significantly increase to £10, even more than that, because people are buying more grocery items. They're buying the food that they're going to go home and cook at home. So overall, we're seeing that the role of our sector and our members in terms of supporting those communities is getting more and more important, as well as the increased sales of people coming into the shops. There's also the increased sales through delivery, with many of our members adding delivery services to what they do, particularly focused on vulnerable customers, people who are isolating. So for most stores in those neighborhood areas, villages, housing estates, that's really our heartland. In those sorts of stores, we're seeing significant uplift in sales and significant uplift in the value we're providing into those communities.
What about price changes? Is any of this affected by people putting prices up?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And as always with these things, the answer is a little bit nuanced, and we're seeing different things in the market. The vast majority of stores are pricing products at exactly what they were back in February, November, you know, going back, that the typical prices are staying the same and they're coming through exactly as they would do. In some cases, some of the promotions that have been run by suppliers aren't being run in quite the same way. And that's partly just to strip out some of the complexity in store. And also because those suppliers are focused on producing, just getting products out into the market so consumers can get hold of it and we can fill the gaps on the shelves that came up a few weeks ago. So there's a little bit of a factor there. There's another factor where retailers are finding that their usual product supplier might have run out. And it's things like hand sanitizer, toilet roll, pasta, tins of beans, all the things that we know have had really significant increases in sales. So on those sorts of items, sometimes retailers have had to go to different suppliers to get hold of those products. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's brought an increase in the price that the retailer's paying to get it into the store. And so sometimes that's reflected in an increased price to the consumer. So we're seeing a little bit of that. And obviously that is totally legitimate for retailers who are finding new sources of supply. It's better to have that product in the store and being made available, even if it's at a slightly increased price, because that's what the retailer's paying. On top of that, there are some incidents where we've seen retailers in all sorts of sectors, actually, but including our sector, who have put up prices because they've seen an opportunity to do that. On some level, they're trying to sort of ration supply a little bit so that their shelves don't get stripped and they can still offer those products to everyone. Now, that is something that the Competition and Markets Authority are looking at very carefully, and they will take action against retailers who are doing that. But where a retailer said, oh, I could make a bit more money, that I think is very rare in the sector at the moment. The statistics on this, on complaints to the Competition Markets Authority, would suggest this is very rare, but we're determined to try and tackle that, because it's obviously not fair on consumers, but it's not fair on competitors of retailers who are really then therefore at unfair disadvantage because those other stores will be making more money. One of the things that we're doing is running a campaign with the Competition and Markets Authority, communicating through social media, through our trade press, which sends out information to retailers, to just explain that policy. So if you've got increased supply prices, of course you're allowed to pass those on. But if you are profiteering, if you're one of those very small minority of retailers who's profiteering, just to really remind them that the Competition and Markets Authority are looking at this very carefully and they will take action. And also, if you know of other retailers who are doing this, then you can contact the Competition and Markets Authority and give them that information.
Absolutely. So as you say, next phase is nobody kind of knows where we're going to be at, when we're going to be there. Do you think at the moment there's anything else the government can do to ensure stores such as the ones that you look after can continue to keep their shelves stocked at the moment?
Yes, we're working very closely with government. The message we're giving to them is that the convenience sector has really come through for their communities and for the country at the moment. We are playing a huge role now in feeding the nation. So we need the supply coming into our sector to do that. Because retailers are very innovative and they find different pockets of supply from different places, you know, we're managing to keep our shelves well stocked and offer those products in our local communities. But we do need the suppliers to keep supporting our sector, keep giving us the product, selling us the product, that we can then sell on to our consumers. And there are some real challenges in this because we've had such an increase in sales, which is sustained. Suppliers will look at their sales history, what they sell to different customers, and they'll allocate stock on that basis. Perfectly sensible thing to do. But with those sales up and down and all over the place with different customers, it's very hard to accurately forecast sales and then run effective allocation of products on that basis. So we're just working with suppliers, working with government to try and say that we need to make sure we get the right amount of product into the sector, because ultimately consumers are deciding that's where they want to shop at the moment. We're seeing sustained uplift in sales in our sector, so we have to have the product to service that. And everyone in the supply chain is working incredibly hard, people on factory floors, in warehouses and in stores on this, and we just got to make sure we're getting the product through and continuing to support those communities.
If they want to find out a bit more about everything we've been talking about today, where should they go to?
So our website is acs.org.uk, and you'll find a few things on there. Firstly, a whole load of resources for retailers about tackling coronavirus, but also some insights and information about our sector. So you can find out more about the stores and how they operate. Maybe a lot of customers now thinking for the first, I'm trying to think a bit more deeply about their local shop. How does it operate? Where do they get their supply from? How many hours are they open? Who do they employ? Things like that. So all that information for people who are curious about that and maybe have a bit of time to look into some of these things in while they're in lockdown, all that information is there on acs.org.uk.